Solomon's Song of Songs.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the maidens love you. Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers.
We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine.
How right they are to adore you. Dark am I, yet lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, dark like the tents of Kedar, like the tent curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I am dark, because I am darkened by the sun. My mother's sons were angry with me, made me take care of the vineyards. My own vineyard I have neglected. Tell me, you whom I love, where you graze your flock, and where you rest your sheep at midday. Why should I be like a veiled woman beside the flocks of your friends?
If you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherds.
I liken you, my darling, to a mare harnessed to one of the chariots of Pharaoh. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings, your neck with strings of jewels. We will make you earrings of gold studded with silver.
While the king was at his table, my perfume spread its fragrance. My lover is to me a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts. My lover is to me a cluster of henna blossoms from the vineyards of En-Gedi.
How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes are doves.
How handsome you are, my lover. Oh, how charming, and our bed is verdant.
The beams of our house are cedars. Our rafters are firs.
I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys.
Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens.
Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. He has taken me to the banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires.
Good morning to all. Morning. We start a four-week series on the Song of Songs, and must I tell you, I've never been so nervous in my entire life being assigned to preach on from Song of Songs. Before I begin the sermon, let me give you a listener advisory. Today's sermon is rated PG, okay, and so listener discretion is advised. A story was told of a young man who asked his girlfriend's father for his approval to marry her. So the nervous young man tried his best to convince the father that he wanted to marry the young woman because of all her fine qualities. He spoke of her kindness, he spoke of her diligence, her intelligence, her compassion, and her love for God, her spirituality. He also remarked that he would be a fool not to want the woman. And so the girl's father listened carefully and was nodding, and he was very pleased that this young man wanted to marry his daughter. He was very pleased, but then he was a bit concerned. And so he replied and said, "I hope you also have a hidden passion for her." This is one story that would have made you laugh, but you do not want to be seen laughing. Why? Because it can be considered a crass joke. There is a truth in that story, in that any father would want the man who's marrying his daughter to have a passion for her, right? There is a truth in this story that any man who is in love with a girl should be very excited and look forward to the consummation of their marriage. And so we read of Jacob in Genesis. Jacob, who was madly in love with who? With Rachel, right? He was madly in love with Rachel, and so he struck a deal with the father. and say, I am willing to work for you for 7 years in exchange for her hand. And the Bible tells us that he loved Rachel so much that 7 years seems like a few days. 2,500 plus days seemed like a few days. And so when the seventh year finally arrived, on the first day of the 7 year perhaps, he goes to Laban, the father, and he says something like, he says, my time is completed. And what did he say? My time is completed. I want to lie with her. You see that in the Bible. And you read it and you say, ooh, I don't want to tell my girlfriend's dad this, you know. You better not. Okay, why? Because it is embarrassing, right? Because it sounds very vulgar. Because it sounds like it's obscene. It's such an obscene thought that you better just keep it to yourself. Perhaps this is the kind of feeling that most of us have when we look at this book in the Bible, the Song of Songs. We look at it and we blush. We do not want to be caught reading the Song of Songs for our devotions. In fact, I have yet to hear somebody tell me that his favorite book in the Bible is the Song of Songs. And if I do meet one, I would say I would feel a little bit disturbed. Now, why is there an uneasiness with the Song of Songs? Well, if you have browsed it through, you find that there is what? There is kissing. There is fondling. There is embracing. There is a lot of references to various parts of the male and the female body. And there is a reference to the delights of the senses. Touching, seeing, tasting, hearing, and even smelling. There's a lot of very intimate activities going on in this book, which can be very embarrassing to the reader. And it can be very embarrassing to the preacher as well. I was very tempted to bring a paper bag today. But why do we study? Why is it that there's a need for us to study the Song of Songs? Well, let me suggest at the beginning of this series is that it is because we are made to be love-struck. Okay? We are made to be love-struck. We are created to be creatures with affection. We are creatures with a capacity to delight in physical beauty. We are created to be attracted by the opposite gender. We are made with a given longing to have secure and intimate relationships. And Song of Songs is perhaps the only book in the Bible that is totally devoted to the subject of love. And it zeroes in to the affective dimensions of love. So if we seek to find a biblical view of this kind of love, this, my friends, is the book that you need to go to. In fact, I would even say that the Song of Songs is actually a good antidote to the influence of the many love songs and many pop songs that we grew up with, you know, songs that we sang along, songs that we cry with, because much of our idea and much of our definition of love sometimes comes from these love songs, from these pop songs. So let me give you a few examples. For instance, if you were born in the 40s and 50s, Frank Sinatra tells you that love is a many splendored thing, right? You don't want to say that. You don't want to reveal your age. If you belong to my generation, I was a fan of The Air Supply and Barry Manilow. Barry Manilow says, we have the right love at the wrong time. Whenever it's the wrong time, it must be love. And then when you are in your teens today, if you're in your teens, Ashley Simpson doesn't have an idea about love, so she just spells it out, L-O-L-O-L-O-V-E. The Song of Songs, my friends, is the song that ends all songs. That's why it's called Song of Songs. It ends all love songs. In fact, that is what the name of the book implies. It is the greatest song. It is the finest song. It is the song that tops the chart all time. And so if you want to look for a biblical definition of a man and woman love, This is a book that you go to. This is the song that you listen to. Now, scholars have noted that the Song of Songs actually fits to be a commentary to Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 to 25. Why? Because the Song of Songs gives us more insights on what it means for God to see that it is good for a man to have a wife. Song of Songs somehow explains for us what it means for the man and the woman to become one flesh and to feel no shame about their nakedness. If it fits the role of a commentary, then I suggest that it must not be treated as a standalone book, okay? It must not be taken in isolation, but rather it must be read along with other books of the Bible. It must be read in the context of the moral codes that God has laid down for us, His people, His children. And so one commentator puts it very clearly, okay? He says, I don't have it in my slide, sorry. He says, Song of Songs is not a moral social tract. Rather, it is a celebration of love in all its dimensions. And so if you were to read Song of Songs, you have to read it with understanding of the moral codes that God has laid down for us. You have to read it with other books of the Bible. For instance, you have to read it with this, with Proverbs 5, 15, 19. Let me read it for you, for those who are listening to this from the web. Verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your springs overflow in the streets, your streams of water in the public squares? Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. Now, this is not a PUB slogan, okay, telling you to conserve water, but rather this passage is about marital fidelity, because when you look at verse 18 onwards, it says, may your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth, a loving doe, a graceful deer. May her breasts satisfy you always, and may you ever be captivated by her love. Yes, the word breasts appeared there. Okay, and I remember Josh McDowell preaching from this passage. It's there in the Bible? Yes, it is in the Bible. And so, using words like cisterns and fountains, does and deer, it is talking about marital fidelity and the enjoyment that can be found in it. When Song of Songs is read in the context of the Bible's teaching on marital fidelity, then we will see this as a book written written in marvelous poetry, full of evocative images, okay? Evocative and vivid images. It's a celebration of sexual love, marital fidelity between a woman and a man. And so as an overview to this book, let me just mention the following. Number one, firstly, the title of the book and the first verse suggests that it is the best song written by Solomon. Okay, because it says in verse 1, the Song of Solomon. However, in the original text, it cannot be simply determined whether the preposition of pertains to possession, meaning that somebody wrote the song for Solomon and thereby Solomon possesses it, is the owner of the song. Because the preposition of can also mean written by. Okay, which makes it to mean that Solomon could be the writer of the song. Because after all, we are told that Solomon is said to have written over 1,000 songs. So there is a lot of discussion in the academia about the authorship of this book. Good thing is, whatever their views are, does not affect the fact that this book, which is in the Bible, is good for teaching, for rebuking, for correcting, and training in righteousness. Now, there are different ways, many different ways, looking at this book and interpreting this book. And let me mention two. Traditionally, this song has been interpreted allegorically. It was seen as a story with a hidden meaning. And because of the heavy influence of the Greek way of thinking, there has been a fanaticism of finding a deeper truth, okay, a deeper meaning, concealed spiritual truth. Now, the problem with that kind of interpretation is that the meaning of the text is always at the mercy of the interpreter, right? It's always at the mercy of the imagination of the interpreter. And so as a result, oftentimes, the meaning suggested can be very strange and bizarre. Let me give you a few examples. The Jews see the girl's breasts in the songs to refer to Moses and Aaron. That's an allegorical way to look at it. Now, early Christian interpreters, they look at the breasts as the two testaments, the New Testament and the Old Testament, from which the church feeds on. Okay. Another way to explain it, some interpreters say that when you look at chapters 1 to 2, the cooing of the doves, okay? They say that the cooing of the doves refer to the preaching of the apostles. Okay, so a very nice way to describe the preaching of the apostles. Not powerful and always angry, but it's cooing of the doves. Now, I guess maybe the reason for this kind of allegorical interpretation is because of embarrassment. Okay, embarrassment over the book for its sexually explicit language. And it's somehow, that embarrassment somehow led interpreters to try to find, to look for more spiritual meaning. And why is it that they're embarrassed? Okay. Well, it's because, I think perhaps, it's because of an ascetic influence. Okay, ascetic influence that somehow shaped their thinking to tell them that the pleasures of the body are less spiritual compared to the needs of the spirit. Okay, so the ascetic thinking says that, you know, the needs of the body are, they're less spiritual. The needs of the soul, the needs of the spirit, they are more spiritual. And so Song of Songs to them could not be talking about delight in one's physical body, because that's not so spiritual. Instead, there must be a deeper meaning that addresses the needs of the spirit. But we all know that life in the Christian's mindset is not divided into the sacred and the secular. The whole life in the Christian mindset, the whole of life, is actually sacred. Remember Romans chapter 12, right? The way we live our life is our act of worship. And so you do not say, oh, 5 days in the workplace, that's the secular part of my life, or that's a secular mode of my life. But then when I come to church on weekends and when I attend DG on certain weeknights, that is the spiritual part of it. No. Romans 12 tells us the whole of life is a spiritual act of worship. Spiritual, the word meaning, it's a logical act of worship. And so the mutual delight of the husband and wife in each other's physical beauty and the sexual expression they have is an act of worship. Is an act of worship. The delight in that part of creation which God had made and which God called good is an act of worship. And so instead of the allegorical interpretation, I think the natural interpretation of Song of Songs makes more sense. Okay? Where this book is read, and let me quote, it is read as a warm and positive celebration of human love and sexuality in the context of marriage. So how do we begin reading Song of Songs? Well, since it is a love song, we have to read it as it is, a love song. Now, one thing about love songs is that it is not always easy to find the plot, right? We try to ask the question, is there a story in that song? Is there an unfolding of events? Well, unless it is a ballad, okay, usually it's so difficult to find a story in a song. You know, ballads are a different kind of songs, right? Ballads, example of ballads that I know of are Audrey and Diary. You know those songs? Oh dear. Audrey. And Audrey was her name. Na 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 na. Okay. Diary is I found her diary underneath the tree and started reading about me. Okay, it's a ballad. Okay, you know that song, right? You probably will hear it on the radio on Sundays. So If it's not a ballad, it's difficult to find a plot or a story. In fact, it is almost impossible to determine the movement of the plot if there is one. And in fact, a lot of love songs that we know of are like that, right? We can easily spot the theme, but it is very hard for us to determine the story behind it. And music videos do not really help at all, you know. It even makes you more confusing with all those different scenes, right? And so interpreters who try to find a narrative in the story come up with different kinds of stories. And let me just mention a few for your information. Some say, number one, some say that in the Song of Songs is found the love story of Solomon and a Shulamite girl. Okay? They say that the girl comes from a poor town who meets a shepherd boy. Both of them fall in love, but the shepherd boy had to leave. Just like many love stories, right? Somebody just had to go. Okay? So the shepherd boy had to leave. And then years later, King Solomon comes to town and looks for the Shulamite girl. This girl was not interested in King Solomon until she realizes that the king was in fact the shepherd boy whom she had fallen in love with many years ago. A little bit like Cinderella. Okay? Now another story that was suggested is this. There was a Shulamite girl who was madly in love with a shepherd boy. The problem is, King Solomon, who was king, wants the Shulamite girl to be his concubine. And because he is the king always has his way. So finally, the king had his way, but the girl, even though she becomes the concubine of Solomon, will always maintain that her love is for her one and only shepherd boy. Something like Anna and the King, the movie. Okay? The best way to read it, I think, is to look for themes instead of narrative. A narrative which may be in the mind of the songwriter but is obviously absent in the message of the song. And so if we look for themes and not a story, then the song is not about a love triangle among Solomon, the shepherd, and the Shulamite girl. Okay? It is instead simply about the affections between two lovers. And whenever Solomon is mentioned, Solomon is actually just a remote figure referred to because of his grandeur. Let's now go to chapter 1. Ready? Chapter 1, where we find the theme, and this is why I propose, where we find the theme to be about the affections of an incurably romantic. How do we read songs? How do we read songs? Okay? Are you familiar with this? Right. Okay, those of you who were born in the 60s, okay? When I was growing up, John Travolta wasn't always the bad guy in the movies, okay? Remember that, okay? Now, here is a song, okay? For those of you in the 50s who would know, okay? The song is entitled Summer Nights, okay? Song starts with a boy named Danny who sings, "Summer loving had me a blast." Okay? And then Sandy continues and says, "Summer loving happened so fast." And then you have Danny singing, you have Sandy singing, and then Danny and Sandy together singing. And then suddenly you have the friends who say, "Wella, wella, wella, huh." Okay? And then they go, "Tell me more, tell me more, tell me more." Now the reason why I want to show you Greece, okay, this song, Summer Nights, is because I think that is how Songs of Songs is divided, okay? So if you're using the NIV translation, okay, look at your NIV translation, NIV Bibles. The translators have already divided the parts of the song according to the gender of the pronoun. And so you have the beloved singing a few lines, you have the friends singing a few lines, and you have the lover singing a few lines. Okay, the beloved sings a few lines, and then it is followed by a chorus sung by the friends. And then alternately, they change. And then after that, the lover comes in and sings his part. Okay, that's why I thought Summer Night is a very good example of how to understand Song of Songs. Now, what are the symptoms of one who is who is madly in love. Okay? This is the part where I get very nervous. If you look at your Bibles, verses 2 and following, okay, the part that was sung by the beloved, we see, number one, that the incurably romantic longs for kisses. Okay? She says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Oh, by the way, the reason why I did not read scripture and instead had the MP3 player played is because it would sound funny, you know, for me to say, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, right? So, from verses 2 to 4, part that was sung by the beloved, we see that one who is madly in love longs for her lover's kisses, the scent of her lover, and she longs for an escapade. The girl longs for her man's kisses, and as somebody who works in a vineyard, she compares the man's love to be far better than the best wine. She says, his kisses are sweet. And from how I understand it, it probably has an intoxicating effect. She also says, in verse 4, take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers. Now, what we see here is that the girl longs for an escapade. A moment of being together alone, away from the rest of the world. Because undeniably, it is always the desire of one who is madly in love. Do you agree? Remember when you first fell in love, right? You always desire that the rest of the world just somehow, you know, get away from you and that you have a moment of togetherness alone. Where am I? Okay. Isn't it true that, you know, when you are in love, there's always this desire to be together alone with the one you love? So I remember when Anna and I went out on our first date, we had a chaperone. A chaperone. Now, the reason why we had a chaperone, because I invited the chaperone to invite Anna. Otherwise, I couldn't, you know, take her out for dinner. So, the chaperone lives in the southern part of Manila. I live in the northern part, and Anna lives in the central part. I get to choose where we want to have our dinner. Guess where I had the dinner with Anna? In the southern part. You know why? So that after dinner is over, I can drive the chaperone home. Okay? And, you know, and spend the rest of the evening driving slowly. Okay? To take Anna home. Okay, why? Because when you are in love, you will always have this desire to spend a longer time alone with the one you are falling for. Now, the girl here, not only does she long for an escapade, she calls her man the king. This does not mean that the lover is King Solomon. I think it is a term of endearment. Pretty much like the 80s, you know, when the ladies would call their man Prince. Why? Because of the romance between Prince Charles and Diana, right? So they like to call their man Prince. Of course, thinking that their lady died. Let me show you a slide. Oops, not this one. Yeah, I want to show this and show you that some of the love songs actually echo the desire for lovers to be together alone. So, most of you know this love story, Taylor Swift. Romeo, I don't know how to sing this, okay? Romeo, take me somewhere where we can be alone. I'll be waiting. All there's left to do is run. You'll be the prince. I'll be the princess. It's a love story, baby. Just say yes, okay? And then on the second line, okay? So I sneak out to the garden to see you. We keep quiet because we're dead, if they knew. So close your eyes. Escape this town for a little while. So there's always a desire to escape. Escape from everybody. To have a time together alone. Now, the reason why the girl calls him, the lover, the king, is because in love, every groom is King Solomon, a shepherd, and even a gazelle. And every bride is always referred to as the princess or the country maiden. Agree with that? When you look at verse 4, last line or last stanza, the friends come in and sing. And they say, "We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine." Now, funny thing is that whenever a girl falls in love, you will always have 100 opinions from her friends, right? And so the friends come and they scrutinize the man. They give him their ratings. They give her unsolicited advice. And for the girl's sake, okay, they better like the man. And here we find the friends approving of her love for the man. That's why they said, "Oh, we rejoice and delight in you, and we will praise your love more than wine." In other words, they are giving the girl their thumbs up sign for the man she is falling for. The beloved now expresses her insecurity, beginning in the line just before verse 5, when she says, "How right they are to adore you." Why? Because she acknowledges that her man is a heartthrob among ladies. And so I am reminded of this line from this song. "That is why all the girls in town, right, follow you all around. Just like me, they long to be close to you." Hey, this is sung by, of course you know this, by the Carpenters, from the song "Close to You." Why does she feel a bit of insecurity? Well, we are told that she is very conscious about her appearance. See, unlike the more well-off ladies who are fair, this girl is dark. She is as dark as the canvas of a tent. But then the good thing is that she has a plus point. The plus point is that she is hardworking, okay? Being forced to labor for her brothers. And because she is hardworking and she is laboring for the brothers, she has no time, no luxury for a beauty spa. And so she says, dark she may be, she is confident though that she is a dark complexion beauty. One of the symptoms of the incurably romantic is that she begins to be conscious about her appearance. Okay? And this applies both to men and women. In fact, it is always a giveaway sign to all parents once their children begin to be conscious about how they look. So I remember when I started spending half an hour every morning brushing my hair using my mom's hair dryer, my mother knew that I was up to something. Okay? Because once you're madly in love, you are very conscious about your looks. Verse 7, she says, or rather she sings, "Tell me, you whom I love, where you graze your flock and where you rest your sheep at midday. Why should I be like a veiled woman beside the flocks of your friends?" The beloved is asking where she can find him at a time when the sheep would be resting and not demanding his complete attention. Why is she asking that question? Because she is seeking a rendezvous. Okay? It is a little bit similar to, you know, to our way of saying, "Where do you usually have lunch?" Okay? Or, "When's your break time?" Or, "What time do you get off work?" Or, "Which bookstore do you usually hang out?" So this girl desires to meet the shepherd boy in verse 7. She asks for directions, and then the friends, who seem to know everything because of their unsolicited advice, they reply in verse 8, "If you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherd." The answer that they give is an answer that is derived from common sense. Just follow the tracks of the sheep. See, the funny thing with when you're madly in love is sometimes common sense is very difficult to find. Okay, so the friend suggests, "Oh, you just follow, you know, the tracks of the sheep and the shepherds." Okay, and then from chapter 1, verses 15, or rather verse 9 and following, we see a duet. Okay, in verse 9, the lover comes in and the lover sings and says, and he says, "I liken you, my darling, to a mare harnessed to one of the chariots of Pharaoh." Okay? And then after that, the beloved in verse 12 sings. And she says something like, "My lover is to me a sachet of myrrh, resting between my breasts. So from verse 9 and following, okay, we see that there is a duet going on. Okay, the boy sings, the girl sings, the boy sings, the girl sings. A little bit like Lionel Richie and Diana Ross, Endless Love. Okay, boy sings my love, and then the girl sings my first love. Okay, so there's a duet going on. And from this duet, we see that their love is progressing. It's progressing. There's exchanging of their praises. And then it's progressing not from just dreaming of being together in the pasture. It now progresses to dreaming of being together for life. Look at verse 16. She says, she sings, "How handsome you are, my lover. Oh, how charming. And our bed is verdant." He sings and he says, "The beams of our house are cedars and our rafters are firs." So you see in verses 16 to 17, both of them sing about a bed and a house. I guess that's another symptom of being love-struck. There is always a thought of settling down and starting a family. True? Look at this love song. You know this song, right? "You're the perfect one for me, and you will forever will be, da 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 da, for always." Okay? Then the next line, "Come with me, my sweet, let's go make a family, na 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 na." Okay? That's from the song, Always. Have you heard of that song? Oh, that was number one song when I was in high school. Okay? So we see from other love songs that when somebody is in love, there's always a desire, there's a thought, there's a plan of settling down and starting a family. Finally, in chapter 2, okay, verses 1 to 6, the terms of endearment move now to fruits that are delightful to eat. Now, I suggest you shouldn't be reading too much, okay, from chapter 2 onwards, okay? Let me use this illustration just to explain it. I once overheard a girl telling a boy, and she says, "Oh, you are so cute, I would like to eat you." Okay? Now, that is not a cannibalistic language, okay? But I think that is a term of endearment, right? Lovers, you know, they call each other apple pie or marshmallow, right? If you're very Chinese, probably cha shu pao. Now the girl here calls her lover what? She calls her lover an apple, right? Okay, a very good choice to call the lover an apple. She also refers to him as raisins. Now why does she need apples and raisins? Well, because we are told here that she is fainting in his love. Verse 5, "Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love." And some of the love songs do sing about this. Look at this one. Debbie Gibson, "Lost in Your Eyes." "I get weak in a glance. Isn't this what's called romance? And now I know, because when I'm lost, I can't let go. I just fell," right? "Don't know why, something's there we can't deny, and when I first knew was when I first looked at you." One symptom of the incurably romantic is that the man always takes her breath away. She gets breathless, she gets weak, and she longs to always faint in his arms. There is always a desire of fainting in the arms of the man you love. We see that we see a lot of that in old movies, right? And so in verse 6, she says, "His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me, lest," I think, "she falls down." Verse 7 ends this part of the song, and it begins with her singing, "Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires." I think verse 7 does not only end this part of the song, but verse 7 is actually a refrain of the song. And you see that particular verse coming out almost four times in the entire Song of Songs. The verse is considered to be the refrain of the entire song. Why? Because having experienced all the desires, the longings, the faint feelings, all the symptoms of the incurably romantic, the girl now charges all the single ladies. And she says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, let me tell you this. Guard your heart. Guard your heart. Guard your heart." Why? Because love is so powerful. Because love is so irresistible. In other words, she's saying, don't fall in love until the proper time. Because once love is sparked, it is so difficult to free oneself from the alluring power of love. And I think that is the message of this first part of this song. And so what does this first part tell us today? Let me first address the young in our midst, okay? If you are teens, in your teens, if you are single, if you are dating, this is for you. And afterwards, I'm going to address the married, okay? So if you're single, you're in your teens, and you are dating, message of the book tells us this. Do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Do not arouse love, in other words, until it is the right time to consummate your marriage. Why must you not arouse love? Because love is irresistible. It has an alluring power. So if you were to tell yourself that being alone in the home with your girlfriend or with your boyfriend won't set off a sexual desire, that, my friends, is a deception. When you say to yourself, oh, we're just going to stay home, we're just going to chat, nobody's around, we're just going to watch TV, or we're going to play Wii, nothing's going to happen. The Bible tells us, love is irresistible. Do not arouse love until it so desires. In a survey conducted a few years back among Singaporean youth, it was revealed that 43% of boys and 23% of girls had sex within a month of knowing their romantic partners. Within a month of knowing their romantic partners. The survey also revealed that 17% of the boys that were surveyed said that they had sex with their partners on the first day they met. It is no wonder that the number of STD, sexually transmitted disease cases, have more than tripled, it was reported, over the last 5 years. They have more than tripled among people between 10 to 29 years old. 10 to 29 years old. So please do not kid yourself and make plans, for instance, to date abroad, out of town, thinking, you know, hey, it's just a vacation. It's just a time of being alone together, time for sightseeing and picture taking. Why? Because being together alone, far away, it arouses and awakens love, which God wants us to wait until marriage. God's design is for that love to be desired in the context of marriage. Say you're dating and you've been dating for many years. Let me suggest this. You may need to reconsider your long engagement, meaning that you are in a long dating relationship without very clear and concise plans. I remember my previous pastor. He would always teach us when we were younger that as a rule, a dating relationship shouldn't go beyond 3 years. Because after that, it is very easy to fall into sin. Now, my pastor wasn't being legalistic, but he was just imparting wisdom, the wisdom of not starting a relationship until one is ready to get married. Now, for the singles, I'd like to recommend this song for you. Notice that there's a lot of audiovisual going on today. The song written by or sung by a girl named Rebecca St. James. Okay, the title of the song is "Wait for Me." It talks about sexual purity. Okay, hold on. I'm too nervous. I've been pressing the wrong buttons. Okay. Before I play the song, let me just mention the lyrics. She says, "Darling, did you know that I dream about you? Waiting for the look in your eyes when we meet for the first time. Darling, did you know that I pray about you, praying that you will hold on and keep your loving eyes only for me? 'Cause I am waiting for, praying for you, darling. Wait for me too. Wait for me as I wait for you. Darling, did you know that I dream about life together?" See all the love songs, okay? "Life together, knowing it will be forever. I'll be yours and you'll be mine. And darling, when I say, 'Till death do us part,' I mean it with all my heart. Now and always, faithful to you." Let me play that song. So for the singles and those who are dating, do not arouse love or awaken it until it so desires. Now let me address the married. Okay, to the married. If I were to ask you, do you love your spouse? What would be your answer? Of course, we are all somehow pressured to say, yes. Yes, I do love my spouse. But what Song of Songs teaches us is that love is not simply a matter of the mind, nor is it simply a matter of the will, but love is also a matter of the heart. It's a matter of the affections. How do you distinguish love as a matter of the mind, as a matter of the will, as a matter of the affections? Okay, let me give you this illustration. If the boat is sinking and you can only save one person, who would you save? Your wife or your mother-in-law? You already have the answer in your mind. That is an example of love as a matter of the mind. Love as a matter of the will, if we put food on the table, we work our tails off to provide for the needs of the family, because love is a matter of the will. But when it comes to love as a matter of affection, question is, how much affectionate love have you shown your spouse lately? Song of Songs, chapter 1, gives us clues as to what kind of affection wives look for from their husbands. And you find those clues? Tells us, wives want what? Kisses. Occasional escapades. They want praises from their husbands. It tells us that our wives would appreciate goodnight kisses and goodbye kisses. They would appreciate escapades. So if you give them a call in the middle of the day and say, hey, I happen to be free, you know, lunchtime, would you like to meet up for lunch? A surprise lunch? Something that the wives will appreciate. You agree, wives? They're not sure. They have a different escapade in mind. Okay? And now for the men. Song of Songs, chapter 1 to 2, tells us this. Tells us the importance of grooming. And notice that that the girl here longs for the scents of the men. So it tells us, Ben, the importance of grooming. You know, oftentimes, you know, men, when they were single, they are fashionable, right? There's a term for that, metrosexual. Okay, they're very fashionable. But the problem is, once they are married, they become slops. They don't clean up as often as they do anymore. They don't brush their hair anymore. They don't deal with bad breath. They don't wear deodorants. Now let me tell you, men, to be loving to your wives is to labor and make yourselves always presentable and attractive to your wives. Do you agree, wives? You want your husbands to appear attractive for other women or for you? So do you want them to appear attractive and presentable always for you? And so why do we read Song of Songs? In conclusion, let me say this. We read Song of Songs, we need to study it, because we are made to be love-struck. God has wired us in such a way that we see love as a beautiful thing. We see love as something to be desired. We see love as a fulfilling thing where we can find contentment, satisfaction, pleasure, for as long as it is practiced in accordance to God's will. And why did God wire us this way? Well, it's simply because God is love, right? And that the love depicted in the Song of Songs shows us the different dimensions of love. And that one of these important dimensions is the affection part. And that is so when we speak of the love between a man and a woman, and also between Christ and the church. Let me quote this comment from Gledhill, a commentator, and he says, "To love God truly is not simply to keep His commandments, but to thirst for Him as a deer thirsts for flowing streams, and to long for Him as a bride longs for her groom. For that is how we ourselves are loved by God, and it is also how we are to love one another." True love, love that is as strong as death, is not simply a matter of the mind and of the will, but also of the affections as well. And the Song of Songs is there to stop love going out of our relationships with God and with one another. Let's pray.